This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Xiaoning and Roshan. Now, we are running a poll this morning on the BFM Twitter account. That's at BFM Radio. We're asking you, considering the performance of the KLCI this year, is PNB's income distribution of 5.5 cents for ASB satisfactory? Now, we've had 55 votes, and so far the result is pretty mixed. So 40% have said yes, 38% said no, 22% said it doesn't concern me. So do continue to let us know what you think. We'll be taking a look at the results of this poll throughout the rest of the morning. But in the meantime, taking another look at the Malaysian economy. Now, according to the World Bank's lead economist, Richard Record, Malaysia must craft balanced policies in order to address a disconnect between our apparent economic growth and chronic complaints of rising costs from Malaysians.
In an opinion piece, he pointed out that Malaysia's low inflation rate of 1.1% in October was at odds with the persistent grievance about the increasing prices. The economist also repeated concerns that the World Bank raised in their latest Malaysia economic report that highlighted wage stagnation and shortage of affordable housing as some of the culprits of the cost of living squeeze currently being felt.
So for some thoughts on this, we speak to Richard Record himself this morning, the lead economist from the World Bank. Thank you for joining us, Richard. Now, in your economic monitor report, you highlighted a mix of short-term and longer-term solutions to try and mitigate the cost of living problem that's faced here in Malaysia. Which of these would you actually prioritise?
In the short term, I think there's definitely scope to perhaps consider anti-competitive practices and the degree of market competition, better understanding of where there are monopolies or barriers to entry that will allow greater competition in the provision of goods and services. Some scope for price controls, but selectively and really focusing on those goods which are closely associated with the consumption of the B40. I think there's definitely scope to think of deepening social safety nets, again, to protect the consumption of those on lower incomes in the short term. And then sort of efforts to sort of improve understanding around financial well-being, again, particularly for the young and those who on lower incomes as well. Medium to longer term, of course, the big issue has got to be human capital and productivity. I mean, the most sustainable way to improve economic well-being is through wages and improving opportunities around there. I think there's also scope to think about government policies in support of investment and hiring decisions that can perhaps sort of tilt some of the job creation towards higher skilled positions. And sort of structural measures, again, to really consider what are the incentives for housing supply, particularly at the affordable end of the spectrum.
And Richard, to a larger extent, could political uncertainty be also a major factor in the problems that Malaysia is facing?
We are seeing quite weak investment, particularly domestic private investment in Malaysia over the last year or so. Although, frankly, we're seeing weak investment around the world right now. There's an awful lot of uncertainty as far as the global economy is concerned. Of course, it's no surprise Malaysia is an open economy, is susceptible to risks that come with that. That's been driven by U.S.-China trade tensions, a slowdown in global growth, and a range of different factors. So then the question is, what kind of policy steps can be taken given tight fiscal space to try and boost private sector confidence, private sector investment, and perhaps be a little bit more selective when fiscal resources are going to be deployed. I think there's definitely scope around trade policies. A swift conclusion of the RCEP would really help sort of shore up trading opportunities and boost confidence there. Possibly even ratification of the CPTPP could be added to that list as well. And then thinking about, Malaysia's existing sort of investment promotion agencies and investment incentives and think, how can they be perhaps a little bit better targeted around economic opportunities that create high-skilled jobs and create sort of increased economic complexity, better linkages between foreign and domestic firms, perhaps, focusing more so on the quality of investment rather than the quantity.
What do you think are the biggest hurdles faced by the government in terms of structural reforms or getting the right policy mix to address these problems?
The biggest challenge is perhaps undertaking both short-term measures that would perhaps provide some sort of immediate benefits. For example, we mentioned the importance of deepening social safety nets and sort of protecting the consumption of the B40, those on the lowest of incomes, while not losing sight of the deep necessity for structural reforms, which will really drive change over time, particularly around human capital, sort of quality of educational systems, around competition in the economy, around productivity and the long-term competitiveness of Malaysia. And striking a balance between sort of short to medium term is probably the hardest issue right now, I think.
But are these problems unique to Malaysia, or do you see similar gaps in policies elsewhere in the region?
No, they're not unique to Malaysia. I mean, these are the challenges that come with being a country which is middle income, increasingly looking towards high income, and is, in economics terms, we talk about shifting from factor accumulation to sort of innovation and productivity-driven growth. We see similar challenges right across the region. I think Malaysia is perhaps closer to the frontier on a lot of these issues, just because Malaysia is a little bit ahead in terms of development and growth than some of the other countries, Thailand, Indonesia, Philippines, that are slightly lower level of per capita income. These are not unique to Malaysia. Malaysia is one of the having to grapple with these particular challenges. I think it's good to look to other countries that have achieved positive results in a similar area, and I think other countries will be looking to Malaysia as well to see what works here too.
So Richard, as we head off into 2020, what's your outlook for Malaysia next year?
Yeah, so our projection for GDP growth in Malaysia in 2020 is 4.5%. We think that's still it's a little bit lower than the growth rates we've seen in the last couple of years, but we think it's still a strong performance. We would expect to see a sort of return to growth in investment and in exports and trade compared to what we've seen this year. And probably, I think, a recovery somewhat in public investment as some of the key mega projects start to come back online again. I think we would see global growth turning the corner, we hope. We've seen a number of short-term high-frequency indicators suggesting that we've perhaps hitting a turning point there. Some signs that the technology cycle is beginning to turn. Of course, that really matters for an open trade-oriented economy like Malaysia. Of course, there's some cautious optimism around a de-escalation of trade tensions. If that happens and we see a sort of positive movement in that area, that would perhaps potentially provide an upside for Malaysia.
Thank you very much for joining us, Richard. And that was Richard Record, the lead economist for the World Bank here in Malaysia. Cautiously optimistic, actually, on the outlook in 2020 for Malaysia.
Yeah, 4.5% is quite an admirable number, considering the backdrop of all these geopolitical tensions, external uncertainty. I mean, of course, there has been phase one signed of the trade deal, but it doesn't mean that it's going to be hunky-dory, because whether they'll sign phase two is the big next question. And whether the rhetoric will actually increase when you think about it, because Trump is actually heading into 2020 re-elections, mm-hmm. right? So he might not be so friendly to the Chinese and vice versa. So I'm curious how we as Malaysia are going to respond to all this. Nonetheless, whether we have the right policies in place to kind of also improve our economy, not just only in the short term, but long term, right? Because these cost of living pressures are really real. I mean, an inflation rate of 1.1%, honestly, most of the inflation items are control items anyway. So it's not surprising that the number is so low. But the real cost of living, if you ask me, is definitely much higher. So what can we do as a government from a short-term perspective and long-term perspective? Mm-hmm. For example, short-term, I mean, he mentioned things like improving the social safety net.
Yeah, and then the thing about the inflation rate or the CPI is it doesn't include things like housing, right? Affordable housing is not a component that's measured in the CPI. And that's a big part. I think the monitor mentioned this, how affordable housing, the lack of it, is a big issue for that comes into the cost of living. And then, of course, there are the slower income growth that needs to be resolved, as we've just talked about.
But we really need to look forward, Malaysia. I mean, one of the issues we have or face is that we don't have any long-term policies to correct this high cost of living. And that is actually having the right education system and having this economy which encourages jobs which are high productivity. So it's not just about the level of investment, but it's also the quality of investment that counts.
And it's also, while we're on the subject of cost of living, it's also, as you mentioned, Roshan, wage growth. So, but on that note, the government has just recently decided, and this is a report that came out in the papers this morning, they've decided to raise the minimum monthly wage to 1,200 ringgit in major towns under 57 city and municipality councils. So while the minimum wage, this is while the minimum wage remains at 1,100 ringgit a month for the rest of the country. And it is it is in line with what was announced in Budget 2020. So the new minimum wages order detailing these changes is expected to be gazetted soon and due to take effect for all employers from the 1st of January.
Yeah, some of the cities that will be involved here include Kuala Lumpur, of course, Putrajaya, Shah Alam, Ipoh and Subang Jaya. And it'll be interesting to see how the communication of this takes place.
Well, in my discussions with some of the CEOs of listed companies or manufacturing facilities, they already say that most of their staff, the Malaysian staff, earn above 1,200. But what I think the takeaway from this is that our minimum wage of 1,200 is too low. Mm-hmm. I mean, we already know, like Bank Negara came up with what is the minimum living standard, for example, in KL. It's not 1,200. It's 2,400 for a single person, 4,500 for a couple with no kids. Really, if you're living in KL, of course, this extends to beyond KL, so outside KL. But even if you were in a small town, let's say I choose Batu Pahat, is 1,200 enough for you to live on in Johor? I'm not sure. I think cost of living everywhere is high. Maybe your housing is much cheaper there. But your food cost is almost commoditized nowadays. So what you pay in KL may not be very different from what you pay in Batu Pahat.
And the food cost is something that Tun Daim Zainuddin has also asked the Pakatan government to stop making excuses about and ultimately to bring down food costs in order to have that knock-on effect on people's cost of living. So he made these remarks at a public lecture for the Malaysian Institute of Management's Tunku Abdul Rahman series in KL yesterday. He is championing the agricultural sector for job creation as well as also to lower food costs. So he's reiterated his call for the government to set up a new one-stop agency chaired by Mahathir in order to coordinate the agricultural sector. So it's going to be interesting to see how the government actually takes all of this advice and whether or not they can turn it into actual concrete measures in order to reduce the cost of living. But right now we're heading into the 8 o'clock news, and after that we'll be having the Breakfast Grill where Noel Lim speaks to Tay Kay Luan, Vice-Chancellor of the International University of Malaya, Wales. Stay tuned for that after the news. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.